This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Good morning and welcome to episode number 119 of Go To Grandma. This show is originally airing on Zoomer Radio on Saturday, November the 18th, 2023. My name is Kathy Buckworth and I'm your Go To Grandma. No, this isn't a test of ASMR, but I'm whispering because we are spilling some good secrets here today on the show. Have you always wondered what it's like to be rich? Really rich? Or famous? Really famous? I'm so pleased to have Paul Burton back on the show to talk about his latest book, Misfortune and Fame, 10 Reasons You Don't Want to Be Rich or Famous. Paul himself comes from pretty famous Canadian stock, being the son of acclaimed writer Pierre Burton. And he tells us why he didn't think that was such a cool thing when he was a kid. The book is full of anecdotes of the rich and famous and uncovers what the heck they have to be stressed about. We continue with a peek behind closed doors with Doors Open Ontario, which is curated by the Ontario Heritage Trust. Visit in person or take advantage of the Digital Doors Open program, either of which can have you opening doors at the Apothecary in Niagara-on-the-Lake to the beautiful Elgin and Winter Garden Theatre in downtown Toronto and pretty much every location in between. David Leonard from the Ontario Heritage Trust joins me to talk about what's open and heritage tourism. Our Take 5 with RBC interview exposes the scams that fraudsters are employing against our grandkids who are students and perhaps managing their money for the first time. Great advice for us to pass on. I'm not rich enough to have a butler to get my coffee or to have a cleaning service to wipe up the eventual spills I'll make today, but I hope you'll still stay tuned as we spill the tea. Yes, that's what the kids today call sharing gossip on the rich, the famous, and the historical. I'm Kathy Buckworth, and you're listening to Go To Grandma. Paul Burton is up first. Paul Burton is a veteran journalist and currently the editor-in-chief of Metroland, including 6 daily newspapers and 70 community news websites. He is also the author of 2 books, including last year's Shopomania, Our Obsession with Possession, and the recently published Misfortune and Fame, 10 Reasons You Don't Want to Be Rich or Famous. Good morning, Paul Burton. Thanks so much for being back on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I thoroughly enjoyed reading your book. It's a really fun read, but it's got a lot of great information in there about rich people and what the heck they have to worry about. And you quote a study, which made me sort of laugh, but I'm just going to read it out. Sometimes I think that the only people in this country who worry more about money than the poor are the very wealthy. And I think that sort of says it all, doesn't it?
It sure does, yeah. I mean, rich people have all the same problems that we have, and not surprisingly, one of them is money.
Yeah, and I was just going to launch in with that first question about, do they have the problems like the rest of us? What kinds of problems would they have that are the same, and what might be different?
Well, they have problems with their neighbors. They have problems with drugs. They have problems with other addictions, and they have problems with, surprisingly, they have problems with money. Not the same kinds of problems, perhaps, and they're certainly more comfortable or less stressed about it than the rest of us. But indeed, the more money you have and the more stuff you have, the more problems you have.
So that old adage about money can't buy happiness, it can to a certain degree, correct? And you talk about that a bit in the book.
Yeah. I mean, we'd all rather be rich than poor, I suppose.
Yes.
and you know, the book is lighthearted but dark-souled. I mean, it's as much a book about poor people as it is about rich people. That being said, you only need so much to make you happy. And after a certain point, and it's not as big a number as most of us think, it really doesn't do anything for you, and really, in many cases, just causes trouble.
For the extremely wealthy, though, do they ever feel rich enough? You said there's a number and it's not very high, but for them, what is that number? Do they have a number?
I, The problem is, I think for most rich people, it's a growing number, right?
Right.
It's a moving target. First of all, they think, well, I just need $1 million and I'll be happy. And then they get to a million and they say, I need 10 million. And then it becomes 100 million. And it becomes a bit of an addiction too, right? That's not anymore that what the, as I say in the book, it's not what the money can buy, but what the money represents. Or, you know, it's just like, it's like collecting anything. You want more of it. It's human nature.
Yeah, and not the flip side of that coin, but the other part of this equation that you talk about is the famous part of it. Of course, you can be famous and poor. You can be rich and famous. You can be rich and not famous. I mean, rich and not famous is probably the ideal for a lot of people, I think. However, you know, the downsides of fame, you get into that quite a bit. What really struck you when you looked at sort of the way that really famous live?
There are two types of really famous people. Those who love being in the spotlight, and let's just use the former American president Donald mm-hmm. Trump as an example, and then those who, you know, like as I say in the book, George Clooney, who can't take a walk in the park.
Right.
You know, I was reading about Matthew Perry the other day, and he was collaborating with a writer on something, and the writer said, I often feel like I can think better when I walk. And Perry said, no, I can't do that. Which didn't occur to him, but now is obvious, right? These mm-hmm. people can't go out on the street and they can't even cut their grass or go and get a coffee without being inundated by media or fans.
Yeah, and you talk a bit about in the book too about the fact that these really rich and famous people, they build these huge complexes and mansions, but it almost seems necessary for them because they can't enjoy public space. Isn't that right?
That's fair enough, and that's why yachts are so popular
right.
among the rich. They can get away from everyone except maybe the drone or airplane, but. They need security, and they need privacy, and they need walls, and it not only and then it becomes sort of an isolationist thing. They become prisoners of their own castles, and often unhappy because of it.
Are you surprised when the really famous sort of reveal more of themselves to the public? I'm talking about if they are, you know, posting on social media, or someone like Britney Spears, who just had a book come out, even Matthew Perry when his book came out. You know, why would they do that? Why would they reveal so much more of their personal life, in your opinion?
I think because, to be fair to them, they want to set the record straight, or
right.
they want to set it in their own words. And that's fair enough because, you know, being famous, there's a lot of misinformation being written about them every day. And I can only assume, other than that, they probably get a big advance
right.
for the book.
Right, exactly. That's true, too. And that leads me to the next question. As you said, this book, you know, does have some, you know, very serious subject matter in it. Well, it's very anecdotal as well. But what are the consequences for society in a world where this wealth inequity grows by the year? Because you talk about the super, super rich people in here. It's almost hard to fathom how rich they are. This huge inequity of wealth that we see right now.
Yeah, economic injustice is increasing around the world. The gap is widening, and that's nothing new. But when we have wealth in inequality, inevitably, this ends poorly. You know, and we need only look to the history of France or Russia or Iran, to use some recent examples, to see what happens. It's revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the, you know, democratic institutions being affected already in North America. And you know, the world has gone crazy sometimes, we think, just by looking at this. So it's, you know, and the book talks about the hilarious debauchery of rich people. And a lot of it is fun and funny. But some of it is not so funny at all, especially as it affects the general population and indeed the way that society works.
I'm just going to finish off with a paragraph in your book because I think it's a really important message, which you wrote this. We must first recognize that most of us are rich. If we have a place to live and food to eat and can acquire a passport, we're better off than millions of others. Like the multimillionaires and billionaires depicted in this book, we may not be as rich as we would like, but we are still rich, and we are not as poor as we are led to believe by marketing companies, influencers, Hollywood producers, our neighbors, the Kardashians, and the media in general. I love that. It just wraps up for me sort of the whole sort of philosophy behind the book, and I loved it. I read it really quickly, and I encourage others to get it. It is called Misfortune and Fame, 10 Reasons Why You Don't Want to Be Rich or Famous. And of course, Paul, we can find you at paulfburton.com or on social media at Paul F. Burton. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks again, Kathy.
David Leonard is a passionate advocate for heritage tourism and the senior marketing and communications specialist at the Ontario Heritage Trust. As a trusted expert in the field of heritage tourism, David has spearheaded numerous initiatives aimed at raising awareness of the historical, cultural, and architectural treasures that make Ontario a truly remarkable destination, such as the Doors Open Ontario program. Good morning, David. Thanks so much for being on Go To Grandma.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the logistics of Doors Open Ontario, which I'm dying to hear about, I wanted to talk to you first about heritage experiences and heritage tourism. So, David, why are more Canadians seeking out these heritage experiences?
Well, we know that Canadians and Ontarians are looking to learn and to share their local stories while celebrating the diversity of their city, their region, or their province. And that's what Doors Open Ontario does so well. It gives people free access to explore their communities and other communities, and to be curious and ask questions about the historic sites and special places that give these communities so much of their local character and make them so interesting.
And besides people, of course, getting an appreciation for the heritage of these buildings that they can go into either virtually or for real, what impact does heritage tourism and the program Doors Open Ontario have on our economy? It's quite significant, I think.
It is. So since 2002, when Doors Open Ontario began, the economic impact of events has been just shy of $150 million, $148
wow.
as of this year. In 2023, that impact was about $8.5 million in visitor spending, which is being driven by the money that folks who visit events spend on predominantly local businesses. I did some of this myself recently when I was helping out with the last Doors Open Ontario event of the season in Niagara-on-the-Lake at the end of October. And even while I was there, like working on the event, before and afterwards, I made sure to stop by some of the local shops and I had a great lunch. And those are the kinds of effects that when folks travel either within their community or to a nearby community to take part in the Doors Open Ontario events, those are the kind of businesses they spend on, and those are the kinds of businesses that really like help to shape and define their communities as well. So really positive effects from an economic impact standpoint, and Doors Open Ontario is recognized as a consistently strong driver of not only like heritage tourism experiences for their own sake, but also the economic impact is really positive and well recognized.
Yeah, that ripple effect can't be underestimated, as you say, when once you're in that community, shopping local and seeing everything. And the numbers are significant in terms of 265,000 site visits. That's what I have here in 2022. That's
yeah.
really significant.
And it was much higher in 2023. We were very happy with that 2022 figure after 2 years when we couldn't host major in-person programming at all. And in 2023, we overperformed again by about 10% over our business plan targets, reaching a final visitation figure for 2023 of about 385,000 site visits. So that's like about 120,000 or so over what we saw in 2022. So we know that appetite to participate in heritage tourism for folks to travel locally or non-locally and explore and be curious about historic sites. We know that's really growing in this post in this post-pandemic period, and the work that the Ontario Heritage Trust does with our community partners to open these sites and organize this program I think we're doing a really great job of meeting the public where they're at and providing them a range of really engaging experiences. Something for everyone.
Exactly. Like and if you go on the website, of course, you know, there's so many in-person places you can go actually physically open a door. And then there's obviously your digital visits as well, which I'm sure saw, you know, great traffic during, you know, when nobody really could go out. But now you can experience both. So maybe I've never done this before. So walk me through it. First of all, David, it's free, right?
It is. And that's foundational to Doors Open Ontario. That what the program does is provides free, again, and rare access to hundreds, this past year, 576 buildings and spaces that are either normally closed to the public or some places that normally charge admission.
Right.
So that accessibility is, and that accessibility to architectural, cultural, and natural wonders in the province is really important, indeed, again, foundational to the way that this program runs and the kind of appeal that it has.
And if we want to know where we can physically go, of course, on the website, the dates are clearly labeled. Not everything is open every day, which totally makes sense. But you can go and check by the dates and see if they're open just for a day or for a week or, you know, ongoing, et cetera.
Yeah, it's for a day or a weekend in each community each year. So, like, for example, Toronto hosts their Doors Open event at the end of May annually. Each one of our community partners picks a day or a weekend, and that's the time that their Doors Open event happens. But the digital content is year-round and provides like a nice complimentary online experience for folks to learn more about this province's heritage sites. And even though the 2023 season has ended and ended on a really positive note, we're currently working with our partners to register and organize events for 2024. So we'll have more information to share about that in the winter and the early spring.
Okay.
And folks can visit our website, again, at doorsopenontario.on.ca, and they can explore the digital content for now. 276 online experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of stay tuned to learn more about the really exciting in-person experiences, I think, that are going to be coming up in 2024.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Favorite experience in the online world, since this is what we're talking about right now, favorite one for you, David?
Oh,
it's like picking a favorite kid, right?
I don't know if I can do that because it's not... It's not really about me, I think.
Right.
The nice thing about Doors Open Ontario, whether it be online or in person, is that whether or not you're like really, really, really into heritage, mm-hmm. and you're that kind of person who knows like everything about Victorian architecture, or you're somebody who just wants to like explore your community and learn more about its history, we welcome all of those people, a diversity of perspectives and people, and that's what makes this work.
It's something for everyone. And if we want to get more information, as you just mentioned, we can go to doorsopenontario.on.ca or heritagetrust.on.ca. And of course, you're on social media at OonHeritage. Thanks so much for this today, David.
Thanks very much.
As Vice President Fraud Management at RBC, Kevin Perkis leads a team responsible for managing RBC's fraud capabilities within a sound risk framework while protecting their clients. Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for being part of our Take 5 with RBC interview today.
Morning, Kathy. Thanks so much for having me.
So the last time we had you on, we talked about fraud prevention for seniors, but a recent RBC poll suggests students, maybe some of our grandkids, also need help to better protect themselves. Can you share the poll results with us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It's amazing. It is a real pressing need for our students that they're victims of fraud as well. And about 80% of them believe they should be learning more about fraud. About half of them have encountered fraud attempts since starting post-secondary studies. And a lot of them are really worried about identity theft and having money stolen. And with so many things to think about when they're attending post-secondary school, it's quite understandable that fraud isn't always top of mind. But frankly, with new sophisticated scams on the rise, and a lot of students that are maybe managing finances for the first time, it's really important they're aware of the risks and they know how to spot the signs of a scam.
So similar to targeting of seniors, are there scams that are specific to students?
There are. Just a couple of examples maybe might be helpful. One that could be quite appropriate would be a job scam. You know, students are out there wanting to earn some extra dollars. And job scams will try to convince students that there's a great opportunity. And then they'll just instantly steal their background of personal banking information, or in some cases, they may submit a large check, which is fake, and then ask them to transfer money back. And by the time the student realizes it's a fake or a counterfeit check, they're out maybe hundreds or even thousands of dollars. There's also scams we've seen that go through email or text or phone scams where it could be promising loan forgiveness or an ability to get access to funds. You could save money on tuition. These things are scams, and students really should be aware.
So are there some tips that you can share to protect themselves?
I think some of the best things are make sure that if you see something come through that is an unsolicited call, email, text, have your guard up. Assume that it could be fraud. You could be seeing somebody impersonate government, bank staff, law enforcement, people that you might trust. Be very careful not to open any attachments that may be on there or click links associated on there. The other one would be just pause and think. Don't share your debit or credit card information. Don't share passwords. Don't share PINs that might be sent to you. We won't ask, and it's important to make sure that you don't share that stuff proactively. The other thing is, very actively, keep your passwords up to date. Make them complex. Do not use the same password between multiple different places. If you do, then if a fraudster gets one of your simple places, maybe they'll try to replicate that. And really be vigilant. There's a lot of great opportunity now with your online banking to set up alerts that can monitor your accounts for you, and they'll tell you if something weird happens. Also set up multi-factor authentication. Make sure you take that extra step to really keep yourself safe and secure.
These are great tips, not just for students and our grandkids, of course, but for everyone. And in our increasingly online world, we cannot repeat these tips often enough. Do you have any final thoughts on avoiding fraudsters?
You know, at the end of the day, keep yourself aware. If you do find yourself as a victim, there can be a lot of impacts to this. It can impact your credit score, your finances for a period of time. It can be an emotional turmoil or a tough event. And I think regardless of your age, that's true. So it's important to make sure you're staying on top of current scams, keeping yourself informed. You can take a look certainly online at our BC pages. We got some great resources. The Canadian Anti-Fraud Center keeps a very active scam journal as well. So you've got resources at your fingertips.
And if we want more information on this, we can, of course, go to rbc.com. And as you mentioned, the How to Protect Yourself online document. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today, Kevin.
Really appreciate the time, Kathy.
I don't know much about being a millionaire, but I bet I'd be darling at it. Me too, Dorothy Parker. Me too. Money can't buy happiness, but it can buy Paul Burton's book, and I hope you do that. And it doesn't cost you anything to participate in Doors Open Ontario, either online or in person. We can all become a little bit richer that way. Next week on Go To Grandma, we are taking a look at some innovative children's books that are sure to appeal to your grandchildren of all ages. A bit of science, some magic of reindeers, just in time to start building your Christmas book gift list. Then maybe you're trying to sell your house, and maybe you've already moved out to a smaller place, a retirement home, or even out of country. How can you get the best price for your now vacant home? Real estate broker Lisa Bednarski is back on the show to give us some tips on how to fill your bank account while selling an empty home. Take 5 with RBC will be back with their great financial advice as well, of course. Thanks so much for coming by the show today, either on the radio or online. Some rare housekeeping notes for the show. I have very much appreciated the sponsorship and partnership of RBC for the first 3 seasons of Go To Grandma. If you or a company you know is interested in the title sponsorship for the show's 4th season, scheduled to start in January of 2024, please contact me via social media or email. As well, my longtime producer, Kelly Robotham, is taking on a new position at Zoomer. Way to go, Kelly. And I need to thank her for being there at the start for me and helping me provide what I think is a great show week after week. I wish her well and welcome Ian Robertson to the show as producer. Change is hard, but change is good. I'm Kathy Buckworth, and you've been listening to Go To Grandma. Enjoy your grand journey.
Share your thoughts on this show with us. You can find Kathy on Instagram, @KathyBuckworth. or email her, Kathy@KathyBuckworth.com. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.